Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Drop the Mic Live on Instagram. I'm your host, Darren Jenkins, and in a few minutes, we will be joined by director, writer, Chris Chan Lee. We've had a couple of really great conversations. Shout outs to Amy Tseng and Brian Rawson, who's joined me first. And before I get going, I want to make sure everyone knows that Silent River is going to be playing at the Asian American International Film Festival on August 4th at 8:15. Tickets can be purchased at www.aaiff.org, or if you're in LA, come out and join us for a nice night of film on the closing night of the Valley Film Festival, Sunday, August 7th at 6:30. Tickets can be bought at www.valleyfilmfest.org. And I am going to bring Chris into the room now so we can chop it up. Give us 1 second. We're just trying to work out the... There he goes.
All right. Oh, my goodness.
Technology.
Yeah.
It never fails.
I had this all ready to go, Darren. Thank you for your patience. It's just that I haven't done an IG broadcast before, so first time.
That's okay. This is only my third one, so, cool. You know, I'm not a vet, but I tried to act like one. So how you doing, man? How's it going?
It's good. Things are actually going really well. It's been a real marathon for the whole team, so... trying to tap the reserves of energy, et cetera. But we're actually really lucky how things have been going. So I'm excited, you know? We're definitely expanding our opportunities to bring Silent River to a broader audience, which is great.
That's awesome because, you know, as I've mentioned to a lot of people, this is a film that everyone should see. And I think everyone, you know, look, the pandemic taught me one thing, is that we need to appreciate the ability to see things in cinema. It's, you know, because you don't know if there's ever going to be another pandemic, and you should really appreciate the kind of content that lends itself to a big screen or a digital environment, you know, because those are, you know, rare. I was sitting in the theater watching something. I can't remember what it was. And they were showing I guess it's the anniversary of E.T. And I guess they're bringing it back to big screen. And I would love to see that because it's kind of like your film. It's like one of those films that if you can see it in a room full of people, you should definitely do it. You know, it's just one of those kind of experiences.
Yeah, I mean, E.T., an amazing film that's, you know, part of our cultural fabric at this point. And it is really interesting how the pandemic has drastically altered, you know, and influenced our lives in terms of how we consume entertainment, how we share experiences. Mm. I mean, look what we're doing right now, you know?
Right.
Usually
right.
We'd be in a studio somewhere doing something like this. So so the way that we interact has completely changed and communicate. And people are still, I mean, I know theaters are on the uptick and a lot of the blockbusters right. In particular are doing very well. But there's still this sort of tentative, like, should we go back to the movie theaters right now? You know, and there's a lot of people who are trying to navigate that. So it is a really tricky time for sure.
And you know, to Hollywood's credit, and I guess to some degree, they've kind of figured that out. They've kind of said, well, we know that there are still some people who don't fully trust the cinematic experience yet. And so they are making it available for a lot of films to be on the digital experience, which is nice. I mean, it's
Yeah,
good.
you know, I get really worried because, you know, we're trying to spread the word about the film, and sometimes I have to send out screeners and stuff like that. I get really worried about people watching this movie on their iPad, you know, or even on their laptop while they're, you know, doing laundry and eating dinner and taking care of the kids and stuff like that. I mean, I know those are all real world things that people have to deal with, but, you know, it's nice if people can take. I know it's really hard to do, but if they could take 2 hours out of their day, sit down in a movie theater and not be distracted by anything else, it's plus to watch the film in all its glory of Norbert Shea, our DP's wonderful cinematography, Brian Ralston's beautiful music, and Eric Jolly's 5:1 surround mix. Like that totality of that experience is completely different than in a compromised home situation, you know? So.
Can you imagine if back in the day the original Star Wars just came out on an iPad?
It would
How
have still
disappointing.
blown people away. It would
It
have
still
still
would
blown
have been,
people away.
But I mean, you know, it's
I know what you're
kind of like,
saying.
yeah, you know.
Yeah, right.
So, let me rewind a little bit here. I want to go back and talk about like your first, what was your first gig in film? Like, what was the first thing that you like was, because I know you wear a few different hats. You're a director, you're a writer, you're producing. But what was your first actual film, or first work in film?
Well, my very first short was, you know, in high school, and I made a horror movie about my bird
Is that
that ate the
supposed to
whole
That's not
family and
supposed
stuff like that. So I guess that's not a real gig though, but that was my first
It
film.
is though, right? I mean.
I did a lot of stuff in film school even before I got it took me like 2 or 3 times to get accepted to USC Film School, but while I was there, I volunteered on a lot of films. I even worked my way up to being a production manager slash line producer on a graduate project as a sophomore, you know, that wasn't even in film school yet. But then I don't know. You know, everybody, all indie filmmakers, all filmmakers have like these crazy stories about kind of gradually working your way up, 2 steps forward, 1 step back. I mean, I even remember working on like a special short film that Paramount was commissioning for a TV series. And I remember holding on to a C-stand during a rain sequence on the very famous Sixth Street Bridge right now, the old bridge before they replaced it. But they were doing a rain sequence on it, and it was windy and they couldn't just put sandbags on it, so they had the PAs like hold on to the C stands. Like we were just getting drenched, and I'm like, wow, this is like quite a life choice that I made to be here,
It all like I remember being a PA on a few different films, and you romanticize it at that level, right? You kind of romanticize it a little, but in reality, like if it's someone else, like your friend, it's like, why would you do that? That's stupid. Like
Exactly, yeah.
it, but
But there's 100 people who will take that position, you know, if you turn. And all those, there are certain situations I'm kind of thinking like that probably wouldn't fly now. It's just a little bit too much of a health hazard or abusive or something. But yeah, you know, you did what you could. And I, you know, despite things being as they were, I learned a lot on all of those sets, you know? So.
Yeah, exactly. And the one thing about being a PA is it you like if you're decent at your job or to some degree, there's no end to work you can get. Like there like
Exactly.
it's very much word of mouth and
Even.
at that level.
Yeah.
And if you know how if you do your job, you could be working quite often.
I got to say, in my younger days, in my early to mid to late 20s, I just loved physical production. I loved being on set. Like, I would get an adrenaline rush just from being on set, you know?
Yep.
I love production now, but it's tempered by my age and kind of having been around the block and stuff like that. But so, yeah, in the earlier days, I would learn about every aspect of production, sound, editing, cinematography, et cetera. So I would say, like, my real first foray in a key role when I was starting out was I was a director of photography on some independent features, you know, stuff that you would have to really look long and hard to track down on VHS or DVD. But then I was a DP on a few features, and then I would say one of my best experiences was when I was director of photography on director Scott Dicker's Spaceman. And it was a really tiny crew, like almost like no crew really, but we shot in Chicago and Madison, Wisconsin, and he and I were allies. He was one of the founders and creators of The Onion, the magazine, I forget how you frame it, but you know what I'm talking about. And he was one of the original founders of that. Great sense, very sophisticated sense of humor, really smart, and actually like a really serious guy, which is ironic. I find a lot of comedians are actually very serious people in real life, you know, but we had a great collaboration. Like we bartered basically. So I told him I would shoot his film for him in Chicago and Madison over like several months. It took forever. And then on the flip side, he promised to be my sound designer on my first film, Yellow, because he owned a recording studio in downtown Madison, Wisconsin, where he was recording all those radio shows that he did for the Onion, you know?
Yeah. Wow. And you know, and for those of you who haven't seen it, if you can find it, Yellow is still one of my favorite films of all time.
Thank you, Darren.
Take a moment and reset the room. My name is Darren Jenkins. I am the host of Drop the Mic. And we're here talking with director, writer, Chris Chan Lee. His latest film, Silent River, is currently screening at the Asian American International Film Festival and the Valley Film Festival. And you can get tickets, and I will let you know how to do that in just a few minutes. Hey, Chris, you're back. Cool. With that being said, what do you think has been the best piece of advice you've received as a filmmaker, and how did you implement that?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and I'm not sure really the origin of where I heard this from,
right?
But I wish I knew, because if there was a person, I wish I could credit them. But
maybe
what would be at the top? Yeah, what would be at the top of my mind to that subject is identify your voice, you know, and pursue, don't run away about what's unique about you as a person and as a filmmaker, you know? There's a natural impulse as a human being and as anybody who's trying to work in a business or an industry to conform to things around you and to try to match or place yourself amongst others. But one thing I know that I've done since I did Yellow and even prior to that with my other spec screenplays is I embrace the fact that I come from an immigrant family and that I'm Asian American. And especially at that time, I was really different from all the players in Hollywood and stuff like that. And for a long time, it was very undesirable to be a person of color in this business.
Right.
But I felt like it gave me something passionate to invest myself in, something important to say, you know? And ultimately, like, it's great to stand out from the crowd. It's great to be different. It's great to be offering something that is unique to your experience, right?
Yep. Yep. And if you think about it, a lot of the great storytellers are all people exactly that way. They've embraced who they are. They've actually, whatever insecurities or flaws that they might think they have, they've kind of used to, you know. I think I was talking to Amy earlier today. We were talking about how to handle being nervous before you go on the set, you know. And, you know, she said, you know, you use that energy. Well, I think the same is true for who you are, right? You use that being that you happen to be. And because, let's face it, man, it's a lot of energy just being on, you know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
To overstrain yourself trying to hide who you are, that seems like a lot more effort than I'm willing to put forward.
And you know, there's a lot of struggle, you know, in media and entertainment at the get-go. So you got to kind of make it worthwhile to yourself. You know, you have to make it something like a mission. And I think I was also inspired to take that mindset because, you know, even when I was in high school, I was really into a lot of auteurs and experimental filmmakers and things like that, like David Lynch. Even prior to Blue Velvet, which was sort of a setting off point for me, I was a huge fan of his earlier works and the short films and his experimental stuff with the bunnies and all that. I think when you're a kid, like a lot of us, we kind of go to the cyber of getting into fringe cultures and to experimenting with different ideas and influences. And those all inspired me. Those all made me realize that there's something else besides the center of like mainstream culture, as much as I was a huge consumer of that and loved those things. But there's a lot more out there to find community in, you know?
Yeah. Which brings us to your current film, Silent River. Where did the idea come from for this compelling story, and why was it so important for you to tell it?
Well, there are two levels to that, Darren. So there's a practical one, and that is that West and I had been developing a friendship. West Liang, the lead actor and producer on the film, we had been developing a friendship just by meeting socially here and there. And then we started to hang out together once in a while. And so I don't know really what Wes's experience of it was, but for me, it was like, oh, this guy's actually really interesting. He's really smart. We share a lot of passion for cinema, even though we're very different. And he's like an extrovert actor. I'm an introvert writer, you know. So he's also a writer too, actually. But, you know, but we're very different people, but we have this very commonality. There's this commonality in the things that we love. The story is actually a long story, but just to cut to the chase, I eventually wrote a script and I showed it to West, and we had access to a hotel. And basically our approach was to reverse engineer the film. So I'm still on the practical side of things. So it's like, okay, this is what we have. We have this group of talented people, these actors, these crew people. We know they can do some amazing work. We have access to this hotel. So what can we do with these elements? And I would say what was unique about this film for indie film is I was able to do tech scouts, location scouts, during the writing process. So we would literally take measurements, like Norbert would come out with us, we'd take photos and we'd make floor plans, we'd discuss things like what rooms do we like, because all the rooms were really different in their own way. And that's why a lot of the stage direction and the action that occurs, it's all very organic to what actually exists at the hotel. And for an independent film, that's actually a huge advantage, because usually it's the other way around. You write the script and then you find a location at the last minute, and then it's like, oh crap, this stuff isn't going to work. You have to like reimagine it, and then sometimes it doesn't really work out that great, you know? So, so we were able to use the crazy bathrooms, the positioning of the closets, the floor plans, the middle door, all the stuff to be like really native to the storytelling, you know? And then the subjective emotional side, it's going to be a much shorter story, but I feel like those things just kind of appear from my contribution to the work, you know, all the time, in terms of thematically, these issues of like dealing with the past or dealing with relationships, etc. That stuff just kind of seeps into whatever I do, you know. And then of course there's the greater team effort of everybody bringing their life experience and their perspective and their interests as artists, you know, from the performances to the cinematography to the music and design, to kind of bring the world to the surface.
What was the most challenging about bringing the script to life?
Having no money. Having no time and no money. It was really,
that is quite
a t-shirt. No time. Yeah, they, no money.
Maybe that could have been the name of the movie. No time, no money.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's, like that. I mean, that. I guess that's every filmmaker's.
Yeah. Because, you know, dude, it was not a party like, oh, we're making an independent artistic film.
Right.
Let's all put on our berets and, like, you know, twiddle our mustaches and enjoy the smoke. No, everybody was suffering, like, every day. And we were always stressed out trying to make our day. Even though so the script by design was only, like, a 69-page script, which is quite short.
Oh, but we knew, wow, that's short.
It was very short. But we knew, like, in the execution that we needed that, because we were going to play things out in the scenes, as you can tell by the pacing of the film. And we wanted to be able to experiment with behavior and all that stuff. So it was intentionally short. But it's still, we had, our days were packed, and everybody was really working really hard. Yeah.
Mm. Amy says, Chris was sweating the whole time.
Yeah. It was, well, it was hot, too. We were in the desert, so...
Yeah, where, what, like, what, where was this shot mostly?
It was mostly, principally shot in Indio, California, with a little smattering around Palm Springs in public areas, and also out past Lancaster for some second unit, and then some of the pickups we actually did in Los Angeles.
How long of a shoot was this?
It was about 13, 14 days.
Wow.
And then we did some pickups later on that were just like B-roll and things like that, you know.
That's a pretty efficient production.
Yeah, it's really short. I really want to make another movie with this team, and they have at least, you know, 4 to 5 weeks.
Right.
I mean, it's just ridiculous to be shooting so fast. Yeah.
How, speaking of your cast, how'd you go about choosing your amazing, you obviously crushed it because they are winning multiple awards along the festival route. Came together?
Yeah, Darren, it was building blocks. So the cast started with West, and then West introduced me to Amy, and Amy and I met over coffee. I was immediately impressed with her intelligence and sense of aesthetics, although she's told me numerous times she didn't think I liked her, but I really did. I was very impressed, you know. And you know, when you do this, you kind of have to go with your gut, like that's what guides us, you know.
Right.
And I know that's not what do you call it, going with your gut, it sounds like a dangerous thing, but I think that's really how the magic happens, you know. And I was very impressed with Amy. Amy suggested Dakota, because we, you know, and also Amy in particular, as well as Wes, brought in Chandra, and you know, it's not like we weren't looking at other people. We were talking with a numerous amount of very talented people, but there are certain X factor things that you're looking for to fit the role, to bring to the character. and that cast certainly did it. Now, Max was a unique situation because I had worked with Max on my second feature that Phil Lamb, our executive producer, was also involved with, Undoing. And Max had always been in my mind as somebody who's incredibly talented, that I was hungry to work with. I was hungry to share what he offered to have on screen. But when we were filming Undoing, we always had to cancel his day because we just ran out of time, or we got the weather kicked us out, stuff like that. So right. He never ended up in the film, and he was always such a trooper about it. But it was really unfortunate because he brings a lot of magic, you know, to the screen with his inventiveness and his presence and creativity and stuff. So I really wanted to reconnect. So anyway, long story short, I dug him up on social media. I hadn't seen him for years. He came in and we were having a really hard time casting that role. And once Max sort of showed us what he had, it was obvious that he was P2, the character P2, Patrick, you know? And right. And I'm really glad, like, the physicality of the whole cast, like everything just worked out really great together. So it was really lucky, very lucky.
Mm. Maybe, I mean, I know it's a short, you know, it was only 13 days, but maybe that was kind of like a benefit in small ways, because it probably helped the urgency of connecting dots, you know, within the cast.
Yeah, absolutely, Dern. I mean, you know what it did as well was, you know, because we were always short on time, and we only had a 69-page script, you know.
Right.
There were days where I had to go through the script and be like, okay, this is what we need, this is what we don't need. We just threw it out. We threw out stuff. So we were forced to make this decision on set. And I think you're right. It was actually like, you know, there was some kind of arrival there. It was an eye-opening experience of knowing like what was essential to telling this story, you know?
Mm.
And I certainly didn't want to shoot stuff that we were going to throw out in the editing room anyways. So it was kind of a gift in that way of just giving that moment of clarity in deciding on set what we had to film, you know?
Mm. Wow. So I talked to Brian yesterday, and you know, he said something that didn't really occur to me until he said it, which was the score was kind of another character of this film. How important do you think it was for you to nail that score, for this film to be what it was?
It was incredibly important because we have a lot of scenes, particularly in the first third to second third final third of the film, that are like very subjective and experimental, that are very internal to like Elliot's character and eventually Greta's character and P2's character towards the last part of the film, that are not explicitly expressed through dialogue or even right. action, you know? So the way that Brian was able to come up with he would either like support the direct action that was happening on screen and just uplift it or augment it somehow, or he would create counterpoint to contradict what the actors were doing or to present like a different presence in the room, you know? So it was very creative on his part to take that approach. Is absolutely essential.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's like there's three layers to this movie to me, where that if one of them fails, it definitely affects the movie. And I think the three layers to me are the cinematography, which is like stunning, the music, which is like immersive, and the performances. I think you just one doesn't work without the other, and they mesh very well. Like it feels like a big film. Like I don't know how else to put that.
Yeah, exactly, Brian. Exactly, Darren. The only way to pull something like this off is to collaborate with people who take full ownership of their role and contribution on the film. It's never about a director pointing and saying, hey, you have to do this, you have to do that, you know?
Right.
I create
right.
parameters of what we're reaching for and what maybe objectives and things like that. But like Amy, for instance, you know, not only did she was she playing two roles on the film, but yeah. she's also working a full-time job as a costume designer, you know? And
yeah.
and West took like great ownership and investment in this character. You know, I would give him parameters of what we need to accomplish in terms of activity and action. And hey, you can't go past this line. You can't go past that. And this is what you got to open, blah, blah. But he would create, you know, and that's the only way to make something like this happen, you know, and same thing goes down the line with Brian, Max, Chandra, you know, Dakota, Norbert. You know, Norbert and I were both very detailed about our objectives and our shot lists and our design, et cetera. But, you know, what Norbert brings is a supreme knowledge of his craft and also a great aesthetic sophistication. So whatever I tell him, he's going to make it better, you know? So all those moving parts are so important.
What are you most proud of about Silent River?
I think I'm just proud of the finished film. Like we went through tremendous obstacles, you know, and it was like, it's very hard. It's very hard to pull something like this off under the circumstances we were dealing with. And so I'm really proud. I think, you know, my job was just like bringing on the right people, and then they just went and they took off and they did their thing. I feel like I'm a genius for pulling this team together, you know?
Yeah, you might be. You might be.
No,
like, because look, I mean, how much was against you? You didn't have a lot of budget. You only had 13 days. I mean, you're shooting in the desert. I mean, come on, man. There's a lot of things that a lot of filmmakers couldn't have made it work with. You know, and so you should be very proud of all that. What do you think, what will the audience be thinking about in their car as they drive home from watching this film, do you think?
You know, I think people are going to have a very diverse range of reactions. Some people are going to hate it. Some people are going to love it. Some people are going to be like, what was, you know, what did I just see? What was that? And maybe check it out a second or third time. But I certainly know that we did a passion project that all of us got excited about on our team. And I think we're making that film for that part of the cinephile, cinematic, the film-going community. There are going to be, there's a niche audience of people who like challenging films, who want to engage with something that is different, that's not formulaic, you know, that has some cultural familiarity. There's certainly things that we're pulling from that are identifiable, that are touchstones for us all as people. But I think there is an audience for this of people who are going to be like, wow, this is that kind of like exhilarating, exciting cinema that I try to discover at the movie theater or whatever platform they watch, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like there's tons of films where that, you know, are for everybody. Like they're blockbusters, you know what I'm saying? Whatever. But then there are these other films that are they're called cult classics for a reason. And they have a large following and people will swear. Matter of fact, I was just watching one today. I had never seen Leaving Las Vegas ever.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk about it on my podcast. I ain't going to talk, but I could see how this film would not be for everybody.
Yeah.
But
it's pretty dark. Great.
It's pretty dark. It's a little.
If you need a round table for that discussion, let me know. And
oh, well, absolutely.
Maybe Wes might be interested too. Wes might be interested in that one. But I love that song. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think, you know, there's a place for like, play, there's, you know, there's movies and then there's cinema. I think this is cinema. And that there's a very big difference there. I think you come in there understanding that this is kind of like the purest form of the art.
So, a great thing about a movie like Leaving Las Vegas, despite how accomplished it is on so many levels, right? On so many levels. But of course, Nick Cage's performance, like, he really opens his heart and is so vulnerable in that film and is so willing to show the faults of his character and his experience. And that is like true fearlessness. Like, it's really hard to make yourself that open. And even really talented actors can't always do that, you know? And I feel like that's how we got lucky on Silent River, is like West and Max and Amy and all of our cast, like, they went there, you know? And that is
a dangerous place, man, to go.
Very dangerous. Yeah. It messes with your head, you know? So,
Yeah. Before we go, I have a couple of softball fun questions that I usually will throw at people as well. So
I'm getting worried now. You preface it by saying softball, so that means these are
gonna be swear hard. It's fun, don't worry. Okay. What's your favorite holiday movie?
Oh, interesting. Well, these might be mildly embarrassing, I would think.
That's okay. I told people I like karaoke, so there's that.
I like karaoke, but if it's in, you know, as long as no one sees it. But
exactly.
You know, I can only mention the holiday movies that come to mind, I guess.
Okay.
Later, after this, I'm going to be kicking myself for not.
It's like, oh, I should have said this one. Oh.
Yeah, for not saying something cooler or whatever. But I like the really, like, warm and fuzzy holiday movies, you know? Mm. So I like, what's that British film with Keira Knightley in it?
Love Actually.
I like Love Actually. I know it's really cheesy. But
that's okay.
You're asking me a specific question. I like
that's the name of my film festival, man. My film festival is Love Actually. I named it after that movie.
Nice.
Okay, big fan.
Yeah. I like Die Hard. I watch that maybe once every 2 years. Classic action film.
Yeah. So you're in the camp that
yes,
Die Hard is a Christmas movie, right? Yes. Okay, good. All right. Yeah. I was going to say, I'll have to hang up. what's your guilty pleasure? Or what's a guilty pleasure?
Can I just text you a list? Or how do we do this?
I mean, is there like pleasure. A, it could be a so food or just something that you like to do that nobody, like, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe you knit cats or something. I don't know.
Well, my cat is definitely a big deal around these parts. So
there you go.
Yeah. He's in hiding right now. dude, what do I like to do?
Beer? Amy said beer.
Yeah, I like wine for sure. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm not really into beer. What else? I don't know, man. I like to listen to music. I like to watch movies.
You like to listen to music. What's the most recent song you streamed or artist?
Wow. This is like getting exposed. What did I watch recently? I'm sure I saw some. Let me pull up my YouTube history.
Wes says, oddly, he watches sports.
Oh, he's right. I love NFL football, actually.
Oh, what? I didn't know that.
Like, nobody watches football anymore. People only watch basketball.
I love football. Are you kidding me? Okay, football.
Dude, do that. I also, I've been meaning to contact you, but like, you post comic books, and I'm like a comic book guy as well. We got to catch up on that.
Absolutely. I got two big things of comic books under my desk, so I'm sitting here right now.
Sweet. On my playlist, the most recent thing is Blondie. So
that's
legit, that's dope, right?
Yeah, of course. Blondie's awesome. Yeah. I have one more question. Well, two more questions, but one more easy one for you. And this is your fault I'm asking this because you made a film, but do you think aliens exist?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's absurd that we think there isn't life outside of our planet. So who knows, maybe they're just jellyfish, or maybe the octopuses on our planet are already aliens, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Hey, but your I'm cat sure could be an alien,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly. I mean, there's something out there. Yeah, we'll find it. They're going to find us. They're going to find us. So, yeah.
What's and the last one is what do you work? What's next for you? What do you, anything else coming up for you?
Well, we still got our work cut out for us on this film with commercial release and getting the word out, stuff like that. But I am hoping to make a bigger movie with more resources in the near future. So we've got a couple of ideas brewing for that, you know, and trying to pull together as much as this team is willing and possible to do so, you know.
Yeah, it would be nice to see you all back together again on a bigger budget.
Yeah, and you know, we really made this film like this passion project that we know isn't for everyone, but that we're all incredibly proud of, and that we feel is daring and challenging, etc. And I do want the next one to honestly, you know, be a little bit more expansive in the kind of audience it could capture, while still having our voice and while right. still being a challenging and interesting film, you know, and because that presents a whole other set of challenges, right? That's not easy to do either. So,
right.
So, but I want to hopefully try to achieve bigger and better things, you know?
Yeah. Everyone know, like a lot of, it's kind of like misunderstood that people think the bigger, the more money, the easier it is to make the film. I think it's probably harder.
Exactly. It's just a different set of problems. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. And you know, depending on how the money comes, you might lose a certain amount of control. And then that's the
right.
one thing you don't want to do.
Which could be soul crushing. That's what was great
right.
about this experience is we had absolute control over the process. There's no one telling us what to do. So I hope that in a bigger show, like, we still retain that autonomy, because that could kill you as an artist, right? So
right. Yeah. Plus, I want to find out. You should do like a mini series just for P2.
Yeah.
Because I'd love to find out what happens. So,
yeah, yeah.
But. This was fun, man. So do we know if you're going to be in New York at the New York screening, or are you just going to come to LA? Or?
I should be in New York. Yeah. So we're going to have, me and Amy and most likely West, as well as our executive producer, Phil Lamb, there to do a Q&A at the screening on, August 4th, Thursday night at 8:15 PM.
Yep.
At the Asia Society. Everything can be found at AAIFF.org, as far as the program, tickets, etc. It'll be our Manhattan premiere, so we're going to be really excited to share it with the New York City crowd, you know?
Yeah, that should be fun. That should be fun. I'm curious. I want to see like how people like the energy in the room for when that music first comes on. That's always like chills down your neck. So it's kind of cool. Well, I'm looking forward to, you know, seeing you again, man. I wish you all the best with these next two screenings, and I'm sure like everybody will just be very, like all the other festivals have been over the top about this film. I'm sure these two will be just the same. And then, you know, who knows what will be you'll do next. And, you know, I'm looking forward to, I would, to be honest, I've been looking forward to Silent River since you did Yellow Man, because
thanks.
I mean, I was there for Undoing as well, but yeah. I just wanted to see you keep escalating. So
thanks, Darren. I always appreciate your support. You know, it's really great for your help to get the word out and all that. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in New York, you know? So
yeah. Thanks so much. Well, thanks everybody for joining us on the stream today. Actually, if you are around on Thursday, I'll be having my sit down with Dakota Loesch, who I am actually really looking forward to talking to because he's really creepy. I don't want to give too much in this, but he's really good in his role, and I'm really interested in talking with him.
Dakota Loesch plays the role of the stranger in Silent River. He's also got another independent film out right now that is killing it on the circuit and will be out commercially very soon. It's called Anchorage. And he's a really great, fun guy. You guys will love him. So I'm really looking forward to that interview.
Yeah, that'll be tomorrow night at 9:30 p.m. EST, 6:30 PST. Cool. So, Chris, thanks so much, man. I'm looking forward to seeing you on the 4th.
All right. Looking forward to it, Darren. Thank you.
Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Stay safe and hydrate.